very interesting stories and a lot of perspective of how the church in different formats can address mental health issues. Good to have Bob.
Thank you. I was at Saddleback Church for 17 years. I just retired and went into private practice. And going to help churches do what we actually did at Saddleback Church. So the things I want to talk about, we actually did. It's not just here's how it should look. I'm going to talk about here's how it did look. When I started Saddleback Church, my job description was take care of the pastoral care department, take care of my staff. So Red Warren gave me pretty much free rein when it comes to pastoral care. Prior, we had a handful of support groups. Our lay counseling ministry did about 1,000 appointments a year. And it was functioning. And we were like most churches, if you came in with a problem, you were referred out. I have a great passion that the church should be involved in helping people. In private practice, I was a Christian therapist. The problem was I wasn't part of the church. And I would listen to people talk about problems, and I'm thinking, you know, if a well-trained person in your church, a couple or man or woman, they should be able to help you what you're paying me for. So that was my passion 40 years ago. I taught at Golden Gate Seminary, now Gateway Seminary for 5 years, in the area of pastoral care, and struggled with the politics in any institution, and left and started at Saddleback Church. So I recently retired from there. So when I got there, we had 4 staff people, 2 of them were administrative, so we had 4 sets of eyes on helping people. And it quickly became apparent to me that wasn't enough, so I started working with the present leaders, trying to help them to see what they needed to see to help guide and direct people to get the help they needed. And I'm going to say this again and again and again, their doctor is the one that makes the decision about depression. My lay leader simply listened to the symptoms, we talked about that, and would make a statement, you need to see your doctor, because it's a medical decision. So over the course of the 17 years, I went from 4 sets of eyes to over 1,500 sets of eyes. I had 1,500 lay leaders working to take care of people at Saddleback Church, from the prayer ministry, support groups, career coaching and counseling, church counseling, all the way through. So we were all trained to help people with mental illness, get them directed to their doctor. It's something wrong. So we had 1,500 sets of eyes. If you stop and think, a person with depression and the amount of time they're going to spend with the professional is less than 1% of their day. In the church life, the person's going to spend a lot more time here than they will with their professional. Look at this campus. This campus is incredible. And there's a lot of ministries. It's a reflection of life. You've got support groups, you've got small groups, you've got Bible studies, you've got different ministries that people can get involved in. And this is a participation in life. When they're in with the professional, myself included, you know, we've got a sliver of time where we're focused on certain aspects of what's going on, trying to assess, you know, are things progressing the way we hope? And then we send them out the door. What I want to do is to have churches that can connect with people and help them how to do life. When you're depressed, by definition, you don't want to do much. We need a different word for depression because, you know, if the Rams beat the 49ers, 49er fans should be depressed. That's normal. Your marriage is hurting. You should be depressed. So when we use that same word to talk about the clinical or the medical term, we got a problem. So if someone's got to invent another word for those 49 of them, okay, they should be depressed because they're 49er fans. So, after I got a little video that Steve Young sent me about being a Rams fan. Now, that's obviously he's suffering from depression and delusion. The church can provide a real-life setting for people to learn to deal with depression and live. That's what we want to do at the church. We want to help people get the most out of life. We don't necessarily want to turn them into a victim. A victim is, they're broken. They're going to remain broken. We didn't believe in victims at Saddleback Church. God is in the business of restoring people. And we wanted to reclaim parts of life that Satan would take away from people. That was our passion. And it doesn't happen in one day, one conference, or one counseling session. At Saddleback Church, they could go with them. If you're in church counseling, there are no limitations to the number of appointments. You see your professional, you've got a certain number of sessions you can have. But we tried to create the church as a place that could help people on an ongoing basis. And that was my passion. I know that was my senior passion. Ken, who, you know, he believes his church cares too. Every pastor believes their church cares. And we want to make that a reality if we're in the caring business. Lay leaders can help. But we've got to trust the individual. We've got to teach the individual. The individual has to have access to resources. I'm going to talk about each of these real quick. And we need to support the individual. So these are the components that we need to do if we're going to help. So basic care, as our pastor says, we care. I wanted to make my senior pastor's words meaningful and real. Because if he's from the pulpit says we care, and then the people can't find access to people who care, then our pastor lied. And I wasn't going to accept that as a fact. So we got involved. We care too much about you not to encourage you. That is the magical statement when someone would be in our ministry and they would exhibit the symptoms of depression. My lay leaders, church counselor support group leader, on the prayer ministry, they care too much not to encourage a person either to seek counseling, see their doctor, get into financial counseling or whatever area could help them. And that's why we would make the recommendation. It wasn't a statement of judgment. It was a statement, you know, I listened to you, you're struggling. We can help you. There's areas in this church that can help people get what they need for help. So we need to trust the individual. Our profession deals with abstracts. If you've ever looked at the definition of depression for the symptoms to qualify for a legal diagnosis, some of the day, most of the day, nearly all day, and all night, what does that mean? Don't enjoy life. What does that mean? It uses depression to define depression. Those of us in this field, we're comfortable with the abstracts. My lay leaders, I didn't go into the specific definition. I talked to them and say, if you see sadness, do most of you know what sadness is? It's an abstract. If what they're talking about, here's the problem, here's their emotional reaction, and it's an overreaction to what's going on. Your antenna goes up. It might be depression. If all of a sudden they're struggling in their marriage and, you know, there's not an affair, something's not going on, you know, that would account for the dissatisfaction, the antenna goes up. Maybe you need to see your doctor. One of the ladies was talking to one of my support group leaders, And she said, I just don't understand what's going on in my marriage. I lost all desire for physical intimacy. He wants to go out. I don't want to go out. And I'm not sure I love him anymore. So she started asking questions. When did it happen? How did it happen? And it was like a fog that rolled in. And she said, well, why don't you talk to your doctor and tell your doctor exactly what you told me? And she went to the doctor, got some medication, and the fog rolled out. That's what happens with depression sometimes. This is a medical call from the doctor. Psychiatrists, they are wizards on medication because almost all their treatment is with medication. And they know what medications can collide, they know what medications can amplify the effects of other medications. That's their call. I tell my lay leaders, you have no opinion on any medication. How many of you think Prozac is a great medication for depression? Raise your hand. You can't raise your hand. You have an opinion. You can't do that. If they are asking about medication, talk to your doctor. Because if you give an opinion on medication, you put the church in a position where the church is given advice, medical advice, it shouldn't be given. It's always back to the doctor. But the lay leader has enough common sense, enough real life, that you know what? Something's not right here. That's what, when we talk about the profession, you know, we're looking for the specifics on the symptoms. My lay leaders are just, something's wrong here. I'm not sure what it is. Have you ever tasted milk out of a refrigerator? You're not sure it's going sour? What do? You take another taste. And it's like, something's not right. I'm not sure I'm going to drink it. Probably a good move. Lay leaders are not going to hit the bullseye on depression. I don't expect them to. I just expect them to be the eyes and ears as they get to know the people to say, you know, why don't you see your doctor? So, you know, we're not asking them to do that. Lay leaders will know the individual with depression far better than we will as a church leader. This is a big church. The pastors cannot know everyone like the lay leader can. And I talk about lay leader if you're a small group leader, you're on the prayer team, whatever. But they tend to know the people far better, and they will have a more reasonable view of something's not right. This isn't Bubba the way he used to be. You know, Bertha, something's gone wrong. It was mentioned, so I can say this. Women have a lot more hormones than us men. And it goes crazy sometimes. I've been married 40 years. And people come to me and say, can you explain my wife to me? 40 years, I've been trying to understand my wife. I thought I was getting a handle on it until menopause hit. And the blankets go flying. We're hot. Thank you. I didn't realize I was hot. If you meet my wife, you won't tell that story. So they will know the person far more. And lay leaders have enough real common sense life to understand. You know, you are pretty confident in some areas of life simply because you've either gone through it, or you know someone's gone through it, or you read about it or studied about it. How many of you have been divorced? The people in my ministries who've been divorced were the most adamant advocates to defend marriage. Because most of them will say, you know, I shouldn't have, I wish I would have, or whatever. So they were helpful to those people who were struggling, you know, with marriage. So they use these real life experiences to help, you know, keep our eyes on the direction. You teach the individual. Everybody can be trained about the common elements of depression. And again, if some, why don't you see your doctor? How many of you men have been to your doctor in the last 5 years just for a medical checkup? You are unusual. Because most of us don't go. And with men, most of the depression is an agitated depression. We just get nasty. I think men are far more emotional than women. I've been doing this 40 years. If there's a conference on communication next week, how many wives, how many of your husbands are going to come home and say, honey, there's a conference on communication next week. We should go to it. 99% of the couples come see me because the wife said we need to talk to someone. We as men don't have the vocabulary for depression, so we just kind of stuff it, and then it comes out. And we're biting at it. I'll talk to people and say, well, when did it start? About 6 months ago. What happened? I don't know. She just started, and she just wasn't making me happy 6 months ago. And it just kind of grew and grew and grew. And I said, why don't you go see your doctor? I don't need to go see the doctor. I was a drill instructor and with the 82nd Airborne Division in my young life. Now I'm a pastor counselor. And one of the things I will say to men, okay, you go home, lift up your hair if you have hair, and see if tacking on your forehead is not the word idiot. Go talk to your doctor. And tell him exactly what you told me. I'm sorry. I'm really not, but I thought I'd say you're trying to cover it up. Deny it. We can help you with that, Tom. So that they can be trained, you know, in the general area. Don't use the professional language, but if you're working with lay leaders, you gotta use the same language. Because what you don't want is you talk to your church counselors and you use words like withdrawing and hiding and denial. Then your support group leaders, you use sad. And when they get together and they start hearing what each other's saying, they start discussing, well, what does that mean? You want a universal language. One of the things that makes Saddleback Church so effective is we have one language across the board. So everybody, when they're in premarital, the leaders in premarital, they're talking with someone, and they're saying, I got this couple, blah, blah, blah. My church council say, you know what? Bob said you should ask them to see their doctor. So they start helping each other. And they're there to support each other on these areas and basically all of mental illness. They don't have to make the final decision whether or not it's depression. That's the doctor's job. Their job is, if it seems odd, if it seems off. I had a lady, who, she had a chart for her children. And they had to do this, 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 and this. And then they got rewards. And she thought, it worked for my children. I wonder if it'll work for my husband. You know where I'm going with it. And she came in because if he did this, this, and this, he got kind of some adult attention. And I'm looking at her like, and she said, but the ladies at the church thought it was a good idea. I asked her, was any of those ladies married? She said, no. But she was so obsessive, I asked her to go to the doctor, tell him or her exactly what she told me. She suffered with obsessiveness. The doctor gave her some medication so she could take her eyes off of what he wasn't doing and become a wife. And it simply, the doctor helped her, with the medication lowers the symptoms, so she can come out and be the person that she should be. And that's a great example, because in her obsessive, that sounded like a workable idea. And all of a sudden he said, I don't care, I'm not gonna do it. And she said, all men want adult attention. And he said, not when they're humiliated. And she couldn't understand that. With the medication, if I pull back my bangs, Bob, and I saw the word idiot. So they don't make the final decision. The doctor makes the call. And if I catch them getting a little too informative, then I get on the lady here. Next is access to resources. Lay leaders must have 24/7 access. I was there 17 years, 1,500 lay leaders. In the last probably 7 years, I would get calls maybe on my cell phone when I went in the office maybe 5 times a year. When I was in the office, I might get an email or a message about something, but they knew they had access to me. As they matured in their leadership role, they became more confident about what they were doing and should be doing. Now, again, this is not a sprint. This is something that matured over 17 years. Care is a marathon. And you can't get it in place in 30 days. You can't get it in place in one conversation. These are conversations I had time and time and time and time again every year with every group of the people that were leading me and helping with the area of depression and mental illness. Lay leaders cannot be asked to hold their concerns until the office hours. You know, they get home and thinking, you know, they said, I'm not sure I want to wake up. And it done, you know, were they talking about taking their life? Now, they shouldn't be expected to wait until the next morning when the office opens so she can call or he can call and get the information. Initially, in the beginning, they need to have that access to someone that they can process this. In the 17 years, I've probably got 3 calls in the middle of the night with 1,500 lay leaders. So it's not an overwhelming expectation. But to them, it's the confidence of knowing that the church leadership is supporting what I'm doing and what I'm trying to help with. So they have to have access. The support of the individual. Lay leaders are going to make questionable calls. They may say, you know, you should talk to your doctor, and then they're going to tell you what happened and say, oh, I'm not sure I would have done that. But you know what? That's okay. It's like that no harm done. You go see the doctor, there's no harm. One lady, talked about just getting in her car and driving. It was passive suicide talk. They know the difference between I want to shoot myself and I just don't want to wake up. Passive suicide talk. You know, the world would probably be better off if I wasn't here. My kids would be better off if I weren't here. That's passive suicide talk. She was at dinner and is just not known as like, wow, was she talking about taking her life? I don't care if they say, you know what, I ate 15 Flintstone vitamins and went to sleep and expecting not. If they thought 15 Flintstone vitamins could take their life and they woke up, they learned something. They learned it's more than vitamins. And then the next time, people who are successful with suicide, typically there are some previous attempts. And in those attempts, they learned that's not fatal. In 17 years, folks, we did not have a successful suicide or a suicide attempt because of my leaders. We did a number of calls to the sheriff where they came out, they 5150. We had a number of welfare checks where the law enforcement would go to the house and check on someone, but they reacted immediately. They did a good job. And because they are on the front line, they are with the people. They understood what was expected, and they took everything serious. They loved it. I love you too much not for me to call. We got a chance to, can I get three more minutes? Okay, you know, we had one lady. She called the sheriff. The sheriff showed up at the house. The family was furious with us. They took the lady, 5150. They threatened the lawsuit. 30 days later, her aunt from Texas visited. She came by the church. The thing is, she said, that family's had their head in the sand for so long. And that 25-year-old, her niece, she said she was suffering. And finally, someone made a good call because a 5150 family tried to get her out immediately. The doctors wouldn't release her. She stayed in. She got the help. And the niece said, thank you. So, yeah, you might get some blowback. But the blowback is the lead comes at me. Any complaints, they came to me. I intercepted them. I protected my leaders. If you're in a church, you better be willing to protect your leaders. You throw them under the bus, and none of them will work for you. A question, it's a teaching opportunity. But you can explain, okay, here's what happened. What do you think might happen? Because they should have made the call, you know, see your doctor, and they didn't. And I'll talk to them and say, okay, given what you shared, what could have happened? Well, this would have happened. What else? If you're going to cross the street, you can only look to the right, and you get across the street, you're lucky. I need leaders who can look left and right. They can look at the good side and the negative side. And that's what we trained them, and they were very effective in doing. And there was a reason they made the call to see the doctor, supported. Because like I said, it's no harm, no foul. And as a leader, you had better help them with the rationale. Because I'd say, you know, here's the wisdom. There was enough uncertainty that you had, and I trust you. You are well trained, I trust you. You know, it may not make sense, they may not like you, they may be frustrated with you, but it was a wake-up call. And I would hope you would do it again, given the same situation. Okay, so that's what we did at Saddleback Church, and over 17 years, this we were ramping up, and with respect to the different kinds of ministries, this is one of the most satisfying aspects of their ministry because they actually, at the time of need and crisis, were able to respond to help someone they dearly love because most of these leaders, they're going to know them personally. And, you know, they were able to help them. Okay? Want to thank you on behalf of all the speakers for being here today. You're a wonderful group, and now